Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Carl Carlson. I believe our wires are connected and you're online.
Hi, Fred.
Hi. Well, I've almost finished my coffee here, so I may have to leave mid-episode here to refill that, but we'll see how it goes. So the last couple of episodes, and this has been a series that Carl, you mentioned wanted to pursue for a while, is when to use different tools. And we've talked about a couple different tools so far. And if you're listening, if there's a tool you would like us to talk about, if you're not sure when and why you would use a particular three-letter acronym, they all seem to be, or four letters, or I guess FRACIS goes out to six letters. We have a lot of acronyms, or is that the right word? Abbreviation?
Yes, it is. it's called TLA. I'm sorry.
That's right. Three-letter acronyms.
Yeah.
That's right. So the alphabet soup of reliability engineering. And one of the things that I know we've talked about in the past, Carl, is that it's not, we don't do just one thing. We don't just do, say, environmental testing, or we don't just do accelerated life testing, for example. There's dozens and dozens of tools out there. A friend of mine once, I was working on a survey to do an assessment of an organization, and I had about 40 topics and probably 25 specific tools, like HALT testing. Do you do HALT testing and why would be one of the questions. And he said, oh, this isn't anywhere near complete. You need to flesh this out. And he came back with 242 different tools.
Mm.
It's like, no, we're not going to do all of those. Nobody does all of those,
right.
You know, and his opinion was, well, they should.
And yes, if you can, it's kind of like, if you can, you will, or something.
That's right. It's just because I'm pounding a nail in doesn't mean I can't put a flat tip screwdriver along the way to guide it. You know, it's like, what? Mm. So one of those tools that's in our list of things to talk about is the reliability growth analysis, which is, in my mind, a tool that works over the span of development. Or I think it could also be used as you, say, in a factory, put a piece of equipment in and you modify it and improve it or do maintenance, and you're looking at, is it getting better or not, as a tool. But I've seen it more often used in design, especially in designs when it's large, expensive equipment that you're just not going to get a bunch of prototypes to go test. And so the analysis then becomes, are we finding enough faults or mechanisms fast enough? And so that's how I roughly interpret what it is. But I'm not that familiar with RGA.
I became familiar with RGA and RGT. So I'll, in this conversation, and I'll lump together the reliability growth testing, which is the physical testing of the systems, with the reliability growth analysis or modeling, mm-hmm. which is analyzing the data and predicting the outcomes. Just kind of lump those together. And I ran across it years ago when General Motors was first looking at an electric car. They were ahead of almost everyone. They had an EV, electric vehicle project.
EV1. I've actually saw one of those, drove one of those.
Yep.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, their business model looked for success a little too quickly. And so they quite correctly didn't see a rapid deployment and profitability. And so they ended up dropping the project.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they had stuck with it, which would have taken some extra investment, where you'd be at a loss and a loss and a loss, and back then there weren't the subsidies that there are today, that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
They might have been earlier in the introduction of electric vehicles, but they didn't. They pursued it for a while and then dropped the project for some time. But back then on the EV, there was a reliability manager, and his, when I looked at the reliability approach back then, his primary approach was reliability growth, which was take the designs that are being developed by the design team and then test the vehicle on the different tests and analyze the data over time and then plot the growing reliability, which is the aggregate failure rate and or cumulative failure rate, and then predict when you would meet the overall objective for the vehicle in terms of failure rate. And that was the primary reliability approach. Now, I wasn't involved directly in that project, but I remember my reaction back then is that is not enough. That can be a useful tool under the right circumstances, but we should be doing more in terms of product development, reliability, what we now call design for reliability, and there was no such phrase back then.
Right.
Really, reliability tools done during product development, because the reliability growth testing was more of an outcome and was really codified the test, analyze, fix methodology. Mm-hmm. And as we know today, and as I'm sure you learned at Hewlett-Packard, because I remember reading the then CEO's literature, is you cannot test and fix your way into high quality and high reliability.
That's right. That's right.
So I became a little bit jaded on using reliability growth as the primary method. But then I began to understand when you do use it and when you don't use it, because it can be an important tool.
Well, I've seen it used very effectively once, and it was in a software development project. And it was a complex software project, and they would compile it and run a suite of tests overnight, basically every night. And what they did, and they had a very simple analysis technique, is they plotted versus time on the x-axis the cumulative number of failures they found given each day. So if they found 10 more bugs overnight, they would increment up by 10 for October 1st or whatever date it was, and so on. And I said, well, how do you use this? What's the analysis part? And he says, well, you see how the line's kind of going almost straight up? we're finding bugs faster and faster, we're solving them as quick as we can, but we're still finding more. We're not done yet. We need to see this curl over so we go 2 or 3 days or a couple of weeks before we find a defect. And so I always assumed that the RGA was this process of, it was based on the assumption that you have a finite number of defects within, say, the software code or bugs or design flaws. And then through evaluation and testing or analysis, you uncover and fix those defects. And so if it becomes harder to find defects, you found most of them. And then eventually it'll asymptotically approach some level where every software bug you fix, you create another one, basically. So there's a diminishing return on continuing to test and develop. You should ship it. And what they used it for was said, hey, look, this line still, we're finding too many too fast. We need more resources. So they added more developers to fix and resolve the issues as they were finding it. And they also added more test algorithms and more test beds to just get more time on the testing so they could get to that point where they're not finding them as fast. And so it became a part of their resource allocation for the program and how they focused on, are we finding enough of the defects fast enough?
Yeah, very good. Very good. There's a high level, a big picture use of reliability growth, and there's a mathematical use. So let me just talk about both of those.
Okay.
From a high level, I think it certainly makes sense when you're going to be doing ongoing development of a system to understand, to be able to analyze the data over time and see, are you approaching your goal? So if you have a particular reliability goal or a failure rate goal, and you don't meet it right out the chute, And then you do some analyze and fix and then test again. Now you have a couple of data points, and then plotting that over time, you can then see, are you approaching your goal? And here's where, so let me cross over from that big picture look at it into the mathematics of it, mm-hmm. which is if you use the Duane, I forget the name of the gentleman. It'll,
yeah, Duane Plotz. His last name was Duane. I don't remember.
Yeah,
his
last name is Duane. He looked at the data and he observed that if you do a, I think it's a log normal.
Log plot. Yeah, everything's a log. Everything's right. Straight on a log plot.
but what I'm remembering is it the common log ln or is it the log? And I think it's the ln plot. Then it'll be a straight line mm-hmm. over time. But look at the assumption that goes into that. The assumption typically that is used, and I believe it was used by Duane, is mean time between failure, MTBF. Now I'm just throwing an incendiary device into the podcast.
Well, yeah, I took a deep breath here, but if you had better data, you could use different percentile points, you could do different approaches. But it's really, if you underlying it, is just the count of the number of failures you've discovered versus mm-hmm. the time. And
yes, and there's different models. And what a good friend of mine and colleague for many years is Dr. Crow mm-hmm. and
Larry Crow.
He developed the Crow AMSA model, AMSA Army Material System Analysis Activity, mm-hmm. and he's worked together with them and has developed this model, which really took the mathematics and the modeling to a better place. And he's advised me many times that I've taken to heart, which is where you do use reliability growth. It behooves you to start with a good reliability. In other words, don't just start with anything.
That's right.
Use design for reliability, come up with your best approach, and then use reliability growth, Crow AMSA model, to model the results of the testing so you can see, you can predict where you're going to be, and you can analyze the data. Mm-hmm. So it's always advised good DFR as a input to reliability growth testing.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ways I've seen this used, and I'm realizing it's what we did, and we didn't call it RGA, but our program manager for an inkjet printer development, where I was assigned to a team building a new platform, a new whole family of inkjet printers. And he said, I need to know if we're on track to achieve our goals.
There you go.
Right. And he had six different prototype cycles. So we were going to build it really based on the build, test, fix algorithm or model. And each time we got prototypes, they would go through a whole series of everything from bench testing. And we were gathering data from the folks in marketing, the people in software, hardware guys. We had stuff in specific types of tests. But he needed a big picture aggregate of, are we on track? And so at the start of the program, we laid out milestones so that at prototype one, if we could get any of them to turn on and do some basic functionality, we were happy, right? But it was, say, 50% reliable for 2 months was kind of the target we set, given the history of the breadboards and prototypes we'd done previously. But as we got further through the six prototypes, expectation changed in, as an approach to achieving the final objectives. And then we set a series of milestones and markers basically to progress ourselves towards the goal. And then we used RGA basically to gather all of these different data sets that we were getting and to plot it against, are we achieving that goal or not? And we used a combination of block diagrams and specific, like the AMSA model for the software side of it. So we used a mix of different things, but it was really looking at that progression towards the iterative approach to getting to a particular endpoint, our specific reliability.
And I think that's a great story, because I think it is very important for reliability engineers and reliability managers to be able to answer the question to management is, are we on track or not? Mm-hmm. And that how you do it, you can draw on a lot of different tools to answer that question. So that's that would be kind of a high level framing of reliability growth.
Right.
Whereas the reliability growth testing or reliability growth modeling or reliability growth analysis oftentimes becomes more specific, where you get into having to choose the model, you get into having to plot a particular data set. Then you get into things like, are the models designed to track fixes? In other words, you have tests, then you analyze and fix, and then continue testing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll do a series of testing, get the results, and then do a big fix and come up with a whole new phase or a whole new design. Mm-hmm. So you have these different things, and it's important if someone is going to use RGA or RGT that you understand when or how you take, how you analyze the different types of data, because there's the test, analyze, fix, there's the test, and aggregate a bunch of fixes and then do a fix and then start testing again. You have different types of data, and somebody needs to be knowledgeable, if you're using RGA, needs to be knowledgeable in the models themselves, when they apply, when they don't apply, how you aggregate that test data.
Well, I mean, we've talked about a couple different examples of what comes across to me, though, as being across them all, is that you have a complex system that
yes.
you don't know how many defects there are, and you're trying to identify and resolve them in a, whether it's a build test fix program or some other series of programs, or it's a complex system where you just aren't going to get a bunch of prototypes. Now, one advantage we had with the inkjet printers is that we ended up with lots of prototypes near the end of the program, and we could do a lot of different types of reliability testings, both at system and at subsystem level. So we tended to use block diagrams much more effectively. But if we only had one vehicle, like we're making a tank and we have two prototypes, or I was working recently with a medical device that was a huge radiation therapy type system, and they were making one prototype, and every day they were running, they had a block of time when they would do evaluations and run test algorithms, and this is the time when we check it, evaluate it, see what works. And then the afternoon, it was the fixes that were thought through and designed and improved when then get installed. So they were updating things almost daily. And so they would be a natural candidate, in my mind, for RGA to track, are we on track? Are we on making progress?
I agree with you, Fred. That's a good example of when you would use it. You have to have time baked into your product development process to analyze data, fix problems, retest. So where you have that test, analyze, fix capability, and you have a complex system, like you said right at the outset, RGA is a good can be a good method to analyze the data. The separate approach is designed for reliability, where you're using your tools to ensure that your system design meets reliability requirements, and In that perfect world, you wouldn't need a lot of test, analyze, fix. I often find, or I sometimes find, where you need both,
that's
where
right.
you've done your darndest best job on design for reliability, but your system doesn't quite meet it, and you need to have a way to answer the question: are we there yet? Are we good enough? Or as your management at HP said, how do we know we're on track?
That's right.
To achieve our goals by the launch time.
That's right. That's right. And it's a mix. It's always been a mix for me, is the areas that you just don't have good information, where you're simply have opinions or uncertainty, the testing part really helps. And then what triggers then an RGA is that where you have an iterative process, where you're the build test fix is the right word for it, where I'm finding issues and fixing them ongoing. I'm trying to think of what other, I'm thinking of military vehicles where or aircraft, for example, you're just not mm-hmm. going to get a bunch of samples to go brute force test it to a dozen different ways. And right, the medical device, we weren't allowed to test it to failure. Failures occurred was kind of, oops, we shouldn't have done that. You know, they were looking for, you know, the voltage isn't right. They were looking for symptoms of things that weren't quite functional. But it's also, I've seen it done very effectively when it's a repairable system, but it doesn't generally last very long, like helicopters. Mm-hmm. It's like almost every flight that a helicopter does, you have to do some maintenance to bring it back into shape.
So you have different criteria that sort of rolls out or that comes to mind when RGA becomes a useful tool. One caution I'll just for listeners is because you do run into it is you hit when you're doing product development on a complex system like a helicopter or anything, a vehicle, you often have subsystem test data, mm-hmm. component test data, and overall system test data, and how to integrate that is complex.
Yes.
And we won't be able to resolve it in an episode speaking of reliability. In other words, it's something to pay some attention to, because you may be in a lab testing a subsystem and you get certain failure rate data, and then someone else is testing the entire system over in a different, you know, proving ground area, and they have data. Can you or can you not integrate that data, and in what way is not an it takes some thinking as to how to look at the overall data that you're gathering together on a reliability program.
That's right. Yeah. It keeps us up at night sometimes.
Yes, it does.
Well, let's wrap it up there. We've talked about a handful of ways to use when and why you would use RGA, a little bit about what it is. If you are an expert in RGA or reliability growth analysis, and we've missed a few of the perfect applications for it, let us know. We'd love to add it to the notes here and bring it up again. If there's another tool or a technique that you'd like us to talk about, let us know. We'd sure like to hear from you. You can find us at reliability.fm underneath the Speaking of Reliability show, and there's comments and suggestion boxes, and we sure would love to hear from you. So with that, Carl, I think that's a wrap for today.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.